Hebrews chapter 11 tonight, please. Thank you for being here at the youth conference. Thank you, Pacific Baptist Church, for your kindnesses to myself and to my wife. Beautiful motel room, a nice gift basket. Just so many different things. This church is so gracious, and we appreciate your kindnesses to us. And you young people who've come from out in the desert and all over the place for the youth conference, I hope it's been a blessing to you. You have been a blessing to us. You have. I appreciate it. So many young people are so kind. They're nice. They shake your hand. They talk to you. That doesn't happen with a lot of teenagers. And so it says a lot for your character. It says a lot for the folks who've been teaching you and that sort of thing. So I appreciate that very much. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 5. As you find that, stand with me tonight. Louise, jump to your feet, son. Here we go. Good. I was fishing out in the ocean, salmon fishing in the ocean, and I didn't prepare myself. I've been in the ocean fishing several times, never got sick. But this, I kind of set myself up. And so we get out early, of course, to go fish, and there was a man that had a boat, and he took us out. It wasn't one of those party boat deals. It was a private boat, myself and Brother Evans, our associate pastor, and I thought, you know, I never get sick. But I took Dramamine the night before just to be sure, and we're going to go out and do some salmon fishing. And since I was so confident of myself, I had a little breakfast before we left. I had a cheese omelet with biscuit gravy on it, sausage gravy, and I had two Danish and a Snicker bar and a bottle of Sprite 7-Up. We got out on the boat. We get to fishing. It's going pretty well. About an hour into it. Do you know what chumming fish means? You throw bait over the side, try and get the fish in. I was chumming the fish with that food that I had for breakfast. I got sick. I puked my guts out. And so the next day we went out, I said, I'm ready now. So I took Dramamine the night before. I took it the next morning. I put the beads on my wrist. I put ginger candy. Ginger, kind of ginger is supposed to help you. I drank ginger ale. I was eating ginger candy. I had all kinds of stuff ready to go. I loaded up on the Dramamine. We went out, didn't get sick. Came back to the shore, got in, fished early, limited out quick, got back in. The guy we were with said, hey, let's play a little golf. So we get on the golf. As soon as you take, I don't know if you ever take Dramamine before or not, it works great on the ship because it helps you with this. When you get on the land, you go, everything is slow motion. It was like the 60s all over again. It was slow motion. So we're out there playing golf. So I'm thinking, I can't play golf like this. Everything was like, so I got me a monster drink, Louise. Got a big one. I never tried one of those things before. Downed it just like he did. Look, he's still trying to find Hebrews in his Bible. He can't do it. He's been through it 9 times, but he can't find Hebrews in his Bible. So I drank that whole monster drink. I teed the ball down. Right about here, it kicked in. I met the ball when it came down. Never had another one since then. Can't do it. Hebrews 11, verse number 5. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should help. Did Louise find it yet? Help Louise find it. You got it, son? Okay, good job. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death and was not found because God had translated him. Now look at this verse. Verse 5, Hebrews 11. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. Enoch had a testimony before God. He's one of two men who never experienced natural death, Elijah and Enoch. Elijah was taken to heaven by a fiery whirlwind, not a chariot. The whirlwind took him to heaven. And Elijah never knew natural death. Enoch didn't either. He walked with God for 300 years, and he was not, for God took him. God reached down on this earth and just said, you know what? I like that guy so much, I'm just going to take him with me now. And just took him right off the earth. He had this testimony, it says in verse number 5. I want to talk to you real quickly tonight about this. Look at me this evening. Look at me. I want to talk to you about this. What is your testimony? Testimony is what is known about you. Now, not necessarily what is said. People say a lot of crazy, stupid things about folks. Please remember something, folks. You can apologize for what you say about people and what you do with folks. You can do all that all day long, but you can't undo that. So that's why God gave you two ears and one mouth. You're supposed to listen two times more than you're talking. Testimony is what is known about you. Now, do you ever consider what your testimony is? That's what we're going to do for a minute tonight. Father, bless this evening, I pray. Amen. Thank you. Please be seated. First of all, what's your testimony before God? That's what Enoch had. Enoch had a testimony before God that the Bible said he pleased God. Now, does that matter to you? Now, look up at me. Look up at me now. Do you realize, ladies and gentlemen, tonight that God knows you? 7.3, 7.4 billion people on this planet, and God knows each and every person. And he knows who they are. And look at me. And he knows what they are. You know, we talk about being honest before God. How about this one? How about being honest about what you know God knows about you? What is your testimony? David used to gave him to cry, "Search me, O God, and know my heart, and try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." You know, David was a man who had flaws and failures in his life, but I'll tell you something about David. David was more concerned with what God knew about him than what others did. We're so caught up in what people think about us and what people say about us and all of that. And we'll come to that in just a moment. Let's not bypass the most important thing. Your testimony before God, he knows you. First of all, he knows whether or not you're his child. 2 Timothy 2:19 says, "The Lord knoweth them that are his." You know, people can convince themselves of things that are just not so. And when it comes to salvation, you better believe that happens. But God knows. Now, here's the important thing. Have you ever gone to God about this thing and asked him to help confirm in your heart that you really are his child? The Lord knoweth them that are his. Your testimony before God, he knows whether or not you're a child of God. Your testimony with God, you know what? He knows what kind of person you really are. Now, that's one of those good, bad things. It's good. God knows what you really are. People misunderstand us. People mistake us. People don't always understand what we do, why we do what we do. Hey, you ever judge somebody's motives before? Well, I can tell you why, what he's thinking. Are you kidding me? Look at this. Luis right now, his heart rate is right about 342. But I can assure you I know what Luis is thinking. That's what he's thinking. But we don't know that. Excuse me. We don't know. You don't know what the person next to you is thinking or if they're thinking. Whenever someone says, "Oh, I can tell you what they're thinking." No, you can't. No, you can't. But God can. It's a good thing, young people, dear people, it's a good thing that God knows what your testimony is with him. So if nobody else understands you, it's okay. So if you're doing right and nobody else pays attention, it's okay. If you do what's right, no, you don't get any appreciation for it. You don't get an award. You don't get a pat on the back. You don't get an attaboy. No, it's okay because God knows, you see. And we should live to please him so that we know when you pillow your head at night, God knows you did your best. Have you ever been misunderstood before? Have you ever done the right thing and people blamed you for doing the wrong thing when you did it? You see, yeah, Pastor Johnson, there's so much injustice in this world. Oh, shut up. It's unbelievable to me. People get all hung up. Some guy doesn't get something he's supposed to get out of life, and he gets to whine and cry about it for the rest of his cotton-picking days. We're in the car one day with our grandson, Joel. He's 8. And we were talking about stuff that was happening. And Joel, 8-year-old, great philosopher, said, "Well, Gramps, after all, life's not fair." He's 8. I looked in the rearview mirror and I said, "Who's that in the back seat? We got the Dalai Lama in the car? I mean, what do you mean life is not fair? 8 years old. Well, Gramps, life is not fair." Then we were with our granddaughter, Jacqueline. She was about 9 or 10 years old at the time. And I was going on and giving her a bad time, just cutting up. But I was basically whining and griping about things. And she said, "Gramps." I said, "Yes, baby, what is it?" She goes, "Get over it." Oh, come on. I just got rebuked by a 9-year-old kid. Get over it. Oh, yeah, I need to, don't I? Some of you people, honestly, you're still, You're still having a fuss about the fact you didn't get a tricycle for Christmas. It's unbelievable. People whining and crying about stuff. Say, well, don't you think injustice is improper? Well, of course it is. But that's life. Deal with it. Life ain't fair. Get over it. But here's what we don't concern ourselves with. That God knows what we really are. But it's a good thing that he knows. When I do right, as long as I know God is pleased. I can always tell when I preach a really hard sermon at our church, which is like every Sunday. And I can always tell how tough the message was by how fast the building empties. When you really get a hot one, brother, and you say amen, and you look up, nobody's there. You go, okay, I fried them all today. I think so. I went home one Sunday and I thought to myself, I think I made God mad today. I'm not sure. Lord, are you up there? Help me. What is your testimony with God? You say, well, Brother Johnson, I'm not sure. Why don't you ask him? If you're his child, don't you think he wants you to know how things are between the two of you? And how dumb can you be to think you can hide something from him? I think sometimes we're practical atheists. Well, nobody knows. Seriously? You got that kind of God. Nobody knows? God always knows. That's a good, bad thing, but he always knows. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to me carefully. The truth of the matter is, okay, Adam and Eve, the only two people on the planet, they sin, they cover themselves with fig leaves, and then they go hide in the trees. Two people, big planet, and God comes down and says, Adam, where are you? Don't you think God knew where those two people were? Huh? Really? You think Adam's hiding behind a tree going, he can't see me. I mean, Adam, where are you? Don't you think, it hasn't changed with 7.3 billion people on the planet. God knows where you are. He knows what you are. Now, you know, there are people, that means something to us, because here's what that means. I need to be living my life in such a way as to please him. And that he knows that everything's all right with me. And sometimes if the world doesn't get it, it's okay. It's okay. If I know that God is pleased, that's good enough. Proving what is acceptable unto the Lord. You live to make everybody on this planet happy or please your little posse of friends, and you don't even care that God knows that in your heart something's not right, that there's a bitterness in here, that there's a hardness in here, that there's a coldness in here, and that he isn't there. What is your testimony? And by the way, dear folks, look at me. When you know enough to know what salvation is, you can go to hell when you die until you settle it. Doesn't make a difference how old you are. Once you know what salvation is, you stand in peril of eternal damnation, separated from God forever. But it doesn't have to be like that. I just know one thing. I want to go to bed every night of my life, put these fat 10 toes toward heaven, and say, dear God, I hope you're pleased with me today. I want him to be pleased with my life. What is your testimony before God? Number two, what is your testimony before yourself? Now, I'm not talking about being selfish now. All that matters is whether or not I'm pleased with me. Oh, please. People get so shallow nowadays in their living and their thinking. But what is your testimony before yourself? Well, some have what is called a deceived testimony. They have actually convinced themselves about who they are and what they are. And some will do it all the way to hell itself. Example, Judas. Judas was one of the 12 original disciples. Hey, listen to me, look at me. Judas's dad was Simon the leper. In John chapter 12, I had in my Bible that I was going to preach that. In John chapter 12, Jesus is at Simon the leper's house. Jesus healed Simon the leper, a Pharisee, a religious man. Healed him of a disease that was going to take that man to death slowly, and a religion that was going to take him to hell for certain. And Jesus healed Simon the leper, and Simon became a Christian. Judas's dad was Simon the leper, and Jesus came to that house. Judas Iscariot's father was healed by Jesus Christ, and Judas Iscariot betrayed Jesus for the price of a crippled slave, 30 pieces of silver, and is in this day today, 2,000 years later, in hell. Remember the night before Christ was crucified, he said, one of you is going to betray me. Hey, remember what happened? They all jumped up and pointed to Judas and said, it's him. It's him. We knew it was him. No, they didn't. Every one of them came to Jesus one at a time and said, is it me? Is it me? Saddest statement of all is when Judas came to Jesus, already with betrayal in his heart, lost as he could be, and looked at Jesus and said, is it me? He had a deceived testimony. He was lost, look here, and he had deceived himself. Listen to me. Now, if your testimony of your salvation is this, I must be a Christian, I go to church. I must be a Christian, I read my Bible. I must be a Christian, it's Wednesday night and I'm in youth conference. I must be a Christian, I'm on a bus route. I must be a Christian, I go to church. I must be a Christian, I love the Lord. Have you deceived yourself into a testimony that's really not yours? See, I'm not trying to get you to doubt your salvation tonight. I'm getting you tonight to check your salvation. And you check it with God, not with you. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God. These things have I written unto you that believe on the name of the Son of God, that you may know that you have eternal life and that you may believe on the name of the Son of God. Do you have a deceived testimony? Do you have a perceived testimony? A testimony that you've got everybody else convinced that you're all right and everything is okay. That's the sad part about this shallow kind of stuff that's going around today, where all people are concerned about is what people think about them and know. Well, I don't really care about this Christian stuff, but you know, it's a good bunch of people to spend my time with, so that's what I do. That's why there's this exodus of young people who get out of high school, finish up in 12th grade, and they're gone. Because you know what? This really isn't you, is it? Is it? This is really not who you are. Bible believing, Bible thumping, hellfire and damnation, Bible preaching, that's really not you. Now, let me just say this to you tonight. It's not bad that you continue that way. It's just bad that you stay that way. Somewhere along the way, you need to get real, friend, and I mean real about who you are and what you are. You know what's the best thing you could do in that case? Go to your youth leader and say, I'm struggling. I'm just struggling with some things and I don't get it. You know, I've never been bothered by a question from a young person, anybody, matter of fact, who will come to me and say, I'm just not sure I believe this stuff. No problem. Glad to explain it to you. Let's sit down and go over it. What I do have a problem with is, well, Brother Johnson, you don't seem to understand. I've just kind of got to the place in my life where those things are just not important to me anymore. Here's somebody whose Bible knowledge, if you rated it in terms of gasoline, couldn't drive an aunt's go-kart around the inside of a Cheerio once without stopping for gas two times. And they're willing to come and tell me at the ripe old age of 14, hey, Louise, ripe old age of 14, that they know what they believe and why, and they don't believe what I've been preaching and teaching them. That one I have a problem with, but if you want to ask a question, I'd be glad to help you. Your youth leaders would be glad to help you. Your pastor would be glad to help you. Your godly parents would be glad to sit down and say, well, son, young lady, here's how it works. Well, some of our kids, our four children now, when some of them, when they got to the teenage years, they got really, really smart. Brilliant. One of them one day said, well, Dad, I'm not sure I agree with you. I said, okay, let's talk about that for a minute. But let's say it the right way. Don't say, Dad, I don't agree with you. Say it like this. Say, Dad, I don't agree with the Bible. Well, no, I said, no, I didn't make this stuff up. It's from the Bible. That's what we're teaching you. That's what I preach. That's what we believe. That's what we practice. Say it. Say, I don't believe the Bible. And if you're a child of God, it ought to stick right here in your throat. Amen. But young people, if you're struggling in some stuff, please come and see us. I promise you, we're here to help you. Guess what? There were times we had questions about things too, and somebody helped us. We'd be glad to help you. One more thing on this testimony before yourself, and that's the testimony of a believed testimony, and here's what that is. A believed testimony. What's that, Brother Johnson? That's somebody who knows what they are, a hell-deserving sinner saved by the amazing grace of God. And here's what I believe about Mike Johnson. I deserve nothing in life, and I'm nothing without Jesus. And he has made my life something. I think I told you this before. I'll do it again anyway. I'm in the bathroom of the hospital. I'm washing my hands. Man in the sink next to me, standing there washing his hand, older black gentleman. He looks up and he goes, you look like somebody. I said, well, no, sir, I'm not. I said, well, I am a pastor. He goes, ah. you work for somebody. I said, yes, sir, I do. Hell-deserving sinner raised in a drunkard's home. And now a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I tell you, I believe my testimony. I'm nothing without him. I was nothing before he found me, and I'm nothing now. And let me tell you something, friend. Don't you get too high and mighty now where you feel like you made yourself something. No, I'm a God-made man, not a self-made man. What is your testimony before yourself? Third one, and we finish tonight on this one. But what is your testimony before others? You say, well, he said it didn't matter. No, I didn't say that. I said it doesn't matter at the top of the list. But it is on the list. 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 9 says, we are a spectacle unto the world, unto angels, and unto men. Spectacle is the word theatron in the Bible. In those days, there are places where they had plays and different productions and things. They would take a real steep side of a mountain and cut back into it and make seats and then build a stage or platform down below, and people would be literally almost straight up above you. In the city of Ephesus today, in that area, there's a theater there that seats 50,000 people. And it's rugged now, and it's not been used much lately, but you can stand on that stage and whisper. And the person on the top row can hear everything you say and see everything you do. They call them theatrons. That's what our life is before others. They see everything that we do. Now, you know what's sad? Some Christians don't care. I don't care. I live my life for myself. Well, you're a selfish pig or piglet, depending on what you might be. That's selfish. I can't imagine anything more wicked than someone who doesn't care what their life is before somebody else. Because we are a spectacle. The world sees what we do and how we do what we do. In our church, we have one of our men came to us, and he was rough. He wasn't even raw around the edges. He was completely uncooked. Tough guy, been to Vietnam, he's a decorated veteran, but he'd been in drugs, and he just had a lot of problems in his life. When he came to our church, God got a hold of John Pelega, and God began doing some things in his life. Now, he was rough. I mean rough. First service he comes to on a Wednesday night. First service, he doesn't even know who we are, just visited. We had a business meeting. In the business meeting, we were voting on something. And in the first time in the history of our church then, we voted on something. And I said, all in favor? Aye. All opposed? Two guys in the church go, no. I said, okay, carried on the majority, and we just went on. John Pelega, brand new guy, comes up to me after church. He goes, hey, preacher man, got a problem with the two boys over there? I'll get my man. We take care of it for you. I said, what do you mean? He goes, we take care of it for you. We'll get rid of them boys over there. I said, no, man, that's okay. I said, I appreciate that, Brother John. But these guys are good guys, but give me your phone number just in case there's any after effect. Let me know about that. He came, he loved our church. He was living with a woman. They were not married. He heard me preaching about that kind of stuff. He comes up to me after church and he goes, okay, we got to talk to you. Me and my woman. I go in my office, sit down. He goes, what do we got to do about this thing? So you got to split sheets. Got to get separated here. Can't be living together like that. He goes, okay, hey, you're out. He didn't put her on the street. He went and got her a place to stay. You can't tell how many people, hey, look at me, drive a BMW shacking up, tell them that, and they're history. This guy's on the back of a Harley Davidson, walks in and says, woman, you're gone. You're out of the house, we're gone. We're going to fix this thing right. They split up, they got right, they got married, they did their life, they came to our church. This ring that I wear, he built this, he was a jeweler. He was rough. One night we're walking into church, him, his wife, their couple of kids they had, my wife and I and our children walking into one of our old church buildings. All of a sudden I hear crack, zing, crack, zing. John Plager goes, incoming! Somebody was shooting. And I thought, whoa, there's bullets. He goes, get ahead down. Here we go. We hustle all the family in the church. He goes, it's coming from over there, preacher, right over there. I said, well, let's go. So we get in the car. We drive around the corner. And there's a guy standing out in his front yard with a .22 rifle shooting at birds up in the trees. Like an idiot. Ping, ping, ping. We pull the car up. We both get out. I said, hey, partner. Hey, stop shooting, dude. The bullets are flying over our head over here at the church. The guy turns around and he goes, what? John Plea gets out and he goes, hey, stupid! that gun down. Stomps over to this guy, and the guy's standing there going, what? Something, guy, stoop, put that rifle down. Grabs the gun, throws it in the dirt. He goes, pick it up, I'll kill you. My wife and kids are coming over there, bullets flying over there. I'll just kill you right now. I'm over at the car going, yeah. You tell him, Brother John. Yeah. He goes, and we're going over there and have church. And I'm going to come back. And if that rifle's not laying in that dirt, I'll go in the house and drag you, and I'll kill you then. Don't you ever shoot a gun again around here. You understand that? And the guy's going, huh? He said, you heard me, man. I'll kill you. I said, okay, Brother John, let's go to church. We get in the car. We're driving over. I said, Brother John, the guy had the gun. He goes, preacher, it's a 22. If he didn't hit me in the head and kill me, I'd have got him. No big deal. He got in Vietnam, he had been hit with Agent Orange, and it just ate up his body. And when I did his funeral, he's a businessman, he's a jeweler in town. When I did his funeral, he used to run with the Hell's Angels. At his funeral, we had bikers and we had bankers come to his funeral. So all these guys in their suits show up for the funeral. About 5 minutes before it starts, all of a sudden we hear. I thought, what in the world? I look out, about 30 Hell's Angels pull in the parking lot. The head usher goes, preacher, preacher, there's a whole bunch of bikers in the parking lot. I go, yeah, tell them to come on in, get them a seat. We're doing fine. And I preached his funeral to bikers and bankers. Before he died, he said, preacher, man, you tell them straight about Jesus and salvation. And that night, we had bikers and we had bankers got saved. Because of a testimony. Was he perfect? No. No, he wasn't perfect. I got a ton of stories. I won't waste them on you. But the truth of the matter is, John Belega. Okay, he goes one night to make a visit on a lady who came to our church. And him and his partner. Soul winning partner, by the way. And he's sitting there talking to her. And she said, you know, I got a cockatiel. And that thing just bites me. I just got it. I don't know what to do. John goes, hey, lady, I'll help you with that. Watch this. He doesn't ask her. He just goes over, opens the cage, grabs the bird. He goes, now watch. Here's what you do. See, you put your finger up here like this. And when he bites you, boom, boom, you flip him in the head. Boom, 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 boom. And the bird's going. See that lady? Watch. You do this a couple times. Watch. Put your finger up here like this. And the bird bites you. You go, boom, 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 boom. You just keep flicking him in the head. After a while, he'll quit doing that. Don't jump me, son. Dude, don't come up behind me like that. It could be dangerous. Thank you very much. Wasn't that working? It's almost down. Thank you. Let's give this man a hand for taking care of things tonight. I appreciate that. So he says, okay, lady, watch this. Now, one more time, watch. And he puts his finger up there. And when the bird got him, it got him right in the cuticle of his finger. And he went, ah! And he popped the head off the bird. It's rolling around the ground. The lady's going, ah, ah. Brother John goes, don't worry, I'll take care of it. He picks up the head and he tries to screw it back on the head of the bird. Didn't work, so he just went over and laid in the cage. Sorry. Man, that lady never came back to church. People are so sensitive. I'm telling you, they got to get over things. You mentioned the name John Pelega in our church to this day. He's been in heaven for years now. People still remember him. Okay, and I'm not saying the man was perfect in everything that he did or said. We have a jail ministry. He started preaching to the women at the jail. John Pelega. He called them all broads. I mean, that's not the way you talk to a lady. You bunch of broads just need to shut up. You know what I mean? Preacher, come up there and preach for me one time. And I said, yeah, I've been going to jail preaching for years. We go up to service and go, okay, this is my preacher. You're going to show a bunch of respect. So sit there and shut up. Go ahead, preacher. And I go, well, that's a setup. Thank you. But you know what he did? He'd help those ladies. He'd help them get jobs. He'd help them get a place to stay. Okay, look at me. You have a test. Now look at me. It's not that you'd say, well, nobody knows who I am. Yes, somebody does. It may be just a handful. It may be a couple of people. Might be one person. But what is your testimony before others? Please tell me you care whether or not people turn away from Jesus because of you. Or they turn to Jesus because of you. Please, please tell me that it makes a difference what you do with your life. and how you live it, and that you are not your own. You are bought with a price, and it matters. Look at me. Tell me you care whether or not your little brother or sister catches the wickedness of sin and the consequences in their life because you dodged the bullet. Please tell me you care enough to get right about that for their sake. Please tell me you're not one of those teenagers who just walks around their own little bubble in their own little world. Please tell me you're involved in ministries at your church, that you get on bus routes, that you help out, that you serve. Please tell me that you make a difference, please. We have people that go to our church, adults, senior citizens who go to our church because of our teenagers. Because they see them serving, they go, boy, that's different for teenagers, see somebody like this. See, you are a spectacle unto the world, unto angels, unto men. Stand to your feet, please, with me tonight. All I want to do with this message is just get you to think about this thing about your testimony. You should care about what your life is like. You should care about the impact of your life. You should care what your testimony is. You should. First, before God. Secondly, before yourself. And thirdly, before others. Let's bow our heads for prayer, please.